Steve, let me ask you about the iPhone and the Zune, if I may. The Zune was getting some traction, then Steve Jobs goes to Macworld and he pulls out this iPhone. What was your first reaction when you saw that?
$500, fully subsidized with a plan? I said, that is the most expensive phone in the world, and it doesn't appeal to business customers because it doesn't have a keyboard.
Hello! Welcome to the Skullcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Airfront Elijah. Joining me today, he's Cultamax founder. And now that he's not drinking, San Francisco bar fights have decreased 15%. Also, his favorite band is Coldplay. Leander Caney is here.
Oh, I didn't tell my Coldplay story from last week, did I?
No, you didn't.
That's a good one. I'll tell it this time.
Okay, we should start with that because otherwise we're going to forget. Also, his beard musk is the main ingredient in many Calvin Klein colognes. Buster Klein is here.
Hey, man.
What's going on, dude?
Not much. Just sitting here.
Shirtless again.
Of course. Sun's out. Nips out, you know.
Sun's out, nips out. Maybe we just found our episode title. Well, people think that you're joking, but we were talking about this before we officially started. And it's like so hot in Phoenix now that like, you, by law, have to go shirtless everywhere.
Yeah. And Speedos are also a requirement, too.
What is the temperature today, Buster?
Yeah, what is it?
It's only like 85 right now. Yesterday was like 90-something.
85. What is that in Celsius for all of our European listeners? Leander, I don't
28,
know.
28, 29?
That conversion I have no pretty idea. Quickly. It's like 45 degrees Celsius.
It's still hot in Celsius, though, too.
Yeah,
so.
I think you're right. I think it's like 28 to 30.
Yeah.
It's really hot. So when I was in Greece years ago, it was always like 25 to 32 or something.
Uh-huh.
Sounds about right. Well, what a show we have for you guys this week. We are going to be talking about some iPhone 7 rumors. We got a roomie here. I'm going to be curious to hear what you guys think about this. We may not get the dual camera on both models, so we'll be talking about that. Buster has been reviewing the iPhone SE, the iPhone Snooze Edition, but it doesn't seem... You actually... I don't want to spoil anything, but you're not disappointed, are you?
I dig it.
That's general enough that we don't know how you actually feel.
Yeah, it's
we're going to
be
talking about some of the best moments in Apple's 40-year history. They just turned 40 years old, so we'll be discussing some of those. And I have got a monster pick for this week's Faves and Raves and Faves and Raves.
What is it?
And Raves. Well, you're going to have to stay tuned till the end to find out.
Gosh.
It's literally a monster. It's ginormous.
I got to pick something to compete with it, though.
I got something that's going to count. So
I can go first, and you can scramble for your pick.
Okay, all right.
So stay tuned to the end. Well, we'll do that and vote. But this time, we got to make sure we actually vote because last time we forgot. Before we hop into Leander's fun Square or Coldplay story, let me go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace, with the easiest to use tools and templates, Squarespace is the simplest way for anyone to create a beautiful landing page, website, or online store. That is 100% true. I have not found a better way. Build your website today at squarespace.com. You can get started with a 2-week free trial. Also, thank you to Casper for supporting this episode. Casper's American-made mattresses have just the right amount of memory foam and latex, and people everywhere love them. You can check out more at casper.com/cultcast. Casper is taking over the mattress industry. I don't just say that. They have won all sorts of awards, Time Magazine, named them one of the best inventions of 2015, and they have won numerous design awards. They are totally changing the mattress industry, and that's because they have designed this really comfortable, multi-layered memory foam mattress. They made over 100 prototypes of this thing just to get it just right. The top layer has open cell latex foam, then it has responsive memory foam underneath, and then it has an adaptive transition foam. I can't even say it. Transition foam beneath that. And then durable support foam underneath that. It's all covered by a premium woven cover that's breathable and flexible and resilient. It's made in the USA and Belgium. These things are super high quality. They ship to your door in a little box. When you open the box, it kind of expands right where your bed used to be. You can sleep on this thing for 100 nights, and if you decide that you don't like it, Casper will pick up the bed and take it back and refund 100% of your money. You don't even have to pay to ship the bed back. I don't think anyone else does that. Check out the reviews on Casper.com. They have this bed has almost 4,000 reviews on Casper.com. They have a 4.5 out of 5-star rating. Not all the reviews are great either. Some people didn't like the Casper and returned it. But Casper shows you all the reviews, the good and the bad, on their websites. But here's the best part. You can get a twin bed for $500. And if you use code CultCast at checkout, you'll save $50 on your order. And that will get you a twin size bed for $450. You could do a king for $950 or a California king for the exact same price, $950. Check it out, casper.com/cultcast. Thanks to Casper for supporting this episode. All right, Leander. We skipped over your story last week, and I discovered that when we were editing it. So, please, what is your Coldplay story?
So I was in the store the other day, and the music is, you know, it's just... And the lyric of the song is like, what was it? You are the air that I breathe. Uh-huh. And I was like, are you kidding? Someone recorded a song with, you know, something as cliched as you are the air that I breathe. I'm like, I just couldn't. Uh-huh. And then it hits me. Oh, my God, it's Coldplay. And it was. It was Coldplay.
And how awful did you feel when you're like, I can't believe I was making fun of my favorite band of all time. You felt like a real idiot, didn't you?
No, I burst out laughing. I couldn't believe it. I was like walking around, people looking at me like I was crazy. I'm like, completely just, you know, affirms everything I felt about the band. They're completely and utterly pathetic.
Oh, my gosh. You know, you say that to save face, but I know when you're driving around in your Land Rover and Coldplay comes on the radio, you turn it up full blast and you sing all the lyrics. You know them all by heart.
Oh, just thinking about Coldplay boils my blood. You know who's coming, though, to San Francisco in the fall?
Is it Coldplay?
Oh, no, hell no. Radiohead.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that.
They're playing Outside Lands, but it's like, I don't know, it's like about $200 a ticket. All my kids want to go. So we're looking at $1,000.
Are you going to take them all to that?
Because
you've got
no.
Like 13 kids. You're just going to take your favorite kids.
I don't know. I have a fight for it.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're going to audition with pool cues. It'll be like something out of Batman. I don't know what to do. Yeah, I'm going to have to build a trebuchet or something like that and like catapult us in.
Well, if you sit on the side that needs the weight, I can guarantee you can pretty much catapult anyone over that fence. Well, that is surprising that their tickets are so expensive because Coldplay, excuse me, Radiohead, they are not a band that seems to only care about money. I mean, didn't they release that album, what was it, like 3 or 4 years ago, where you could literally pay whatever you wanted and they would give it to you?
Yeah, they've done.
So it's surprising that their tickets are so expensive.
Yeah, I know. Why can't it be pay what you want?
That's exactly what they need to do.
This is like, you know, this is like San Francisco's Coachella. It's like the big, you know, festival for the city here. And so there's a bunch of bands. I mean, there's like a couple of dozen or more. Including,
oh, okay. So it's not just a Radiohead concert.
No. There's a bunch. It's like a 2-day. But this is like for a 1-day pass to see. And there's like, I don't know, three stages. And so I don't know who else is playing the same day that Radiohead's playing. But, you know, on the ticket is Duran Duran. And who was the other one? There was a whole bunch of people.
My
daughter knew them all. To my embarrassment, I was like, I hadn't heard of half of them. Except Duran Duran.
Oh, Lionel Richie's going to be there?
Lionel Richie,
oh,
right.
Really?
Yeah. LCD what? Sound System.
Is The Weeknd going to be there?
I don't see them on the lineup. Sorry.
That's a he.
Oh, yeah, sorry. No,
he's not there. I actually know who he is.
I would love to see Lionel Richie
really?
Live. Oh, yeah. I'm a huge Lionel Richie fan.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot stand him either.
Come on. He's good.
No, he's not. He's horrible.
All night long. All night long.
Oh, the songs.
Dude.
His earlier stuff was better, for sure. But, I mean, most bands, you could say that about. Okay, cool. Well, let's dive into some Apple news. Let's start with some light stuff, Buster.
Oh, okay.
Let's do this... Apple might finally let you delete unwanted iOS apps. Story.
Finally. God.
This is long overdue.
Yeah.
And didn't Tim Cook say he didn't even know if this was possible sometime back?
Yeah, he said it last year. He told BuzzFeed that if you remove some apps, then some functions in iOS wouldn't work, which so they just can't take them out. So somebody found some code in iTunes or some metadata, I don't know, and they found that Apple's going to add like a value that would allow you to like toggle an app on or off.
Yeah.
So it might not even be like completely deleted to save you space. It just might be like invisible. That way you don't have the junk drawer of apps anymore.
Yeah, that would be nice. Even if you could just, if, when you deleted them, if you wanted to like restore them later, you had to go into like the settings or something and just unhide the icon.
Yeah.
That would be great. But yeah, every time I get a new Apple device, you always create that folder of Apple stuff that you won't use.
Uh-huh.
And it all gets dumped into that one folder. And since I manage all my family's Apple devices, I've done this like 20 times. So it's cool to see that hopefully. Is this a sure thing or is this just like one of those this might happen type things?
It might happen. But I mean, if there's code, it looks like Apple's going that way. So it's probably going to happen.
Cool. Let's move on to dual camera.
Dual cameras.
iPhone 7.
Two cameras.
So we've talked about the iPhone 7 having two cameras, not one. And there's a new rumor out from KGI securities analyst, Apple analyst superstar, Ming-Chi Kuo. And he said that the dual cameras will be exclusive to the next generation 5.5-inch iPhone, a.k.a. the 7 Plus, and not on the smaller phone. That seems strange to me because
I thought we've known this for a while.
Yeah, we've discussed this before.
Yeah, well, we've talked about the possibility this. That it might end up on the 7 Plus, but not that I don't think there was a rumor out before that said it would only be on the 7 Plus.
Well, what do you mean? We talked about it being on the 7 Plus.
To but
me,
also that, on the 7.
No, only on the 7. That to me the whole time means if it's going to be it's going to debut on the 7 Plus means it's not going to debut on the 7, the smaller size.
But if they only included it on the 7 Plus, the 7 isn't really looking like it's going to be that different from the 6S. There's got to be something else. I mean, as of right now, they're going to be very, very similar phones. So it seems weird to me that they would only put this on the 7 Plus, which is why I find this rumor hard to believe.
Oh, but supplies, I was supposed, because Sony was the one that was saying their supply isn't going to be ready for like high demand until the beginning of next year. And so they're expecting only like cursory smartphones to have it like at the towards the end of 2016. So that's why Ming-Chi Kuo said they would only be using it on the 7 Plus because they just wouldn't have enough supply to put it in the 7 as well.
I also read a little blurb that he said that the dual cameras were actually kind of a disappointment so far in their testing.
Who was saying that?
Ming-Chi Kuo.
Ming-Chi Kuo.
I don't know about that. People are raving about that LG phone with the dual cameras.
Which one?
I can't remember what it's called, you know, but it's LG.
I don't remember the name of it either. LG dual
I think it just came out, and I saw
and
some
people
stuff.
Really liked it, huh?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. People are saying it's great.
You can take dual selfies. Oh, wait, no, this is old. Never mind. Yeah. Scratch that. That'd be pretty awesome, though, if you could take two selfies at one time. Ideally, what I'd love to see, and I know I'm not alone here, is the 7 and the 7 Plus and all the future iPhones are exactly the same. They just have larger screen sizes on the Plus version, right? Other than that, you should get the exact same phone. But do you guys think that people might not want to pay an extra $100 simply for a larger screen?
Well, it's more than that, isn't it? It's, you know, the guts and the camera.
Yeah, but I'm saying if they homogenize that, so they're exactly the same device,
yeah, well, yeah.
The 7 and the 7 Plus, hypothetically, exactly the same, but one is larger than the other. Would you be willing to pay an extra $100 just to have the larger real estate?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I did. But I don't think
I think that would be enough.
But on the MacBooks, on the iPads, like the bigger size has better features, you know, usually.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't think they would ever. I mean, they are pretty close right now. There's just like some very minor differences, like the optical image stabilization on the 6S Plus. But
right.
I don't know. I could see them definitely doing it and making it more of like a, this is the iPhone for like really serious photographers.
Yeah, the iPhone Pro.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks that they do this, and they do it, like you said, with their Macs too. I mean, like you can only get a dedicated graphics card in the top-end MacBook Pro 15-inch, right? But it would be great if you could get that kind of power in a 13-inch, something that's a little bit more portable. And same with the iPhone. I would love to have the dual camera, assuming it's cool. I'd love to have that feature, but I really don't want to have the 6 Plus or the plus size iPhone anymore. I just feel like it's just too large.
Too big for you?
It's just too big for my pantaloons.
Yeah.
My pantaloons. We've talked about this 100 times. I mean, you know, when you're wearing tight jeans and you jam a large phone in there,
it's not
it
pleasant.
It can be unpleasant on the frontal region because there's just no place for the phone to go. And I'm tired of getting jostled about by a large phone. So I'd love to have that on a just a regular sized iPhone. But alas, we'll have to wait and see.
It'll trickle down.
Eventually it will. Yeah, eventually.
I wonder if there's technical reasons why they can't do it, you know, because it needs, you know, it needs that larger form factor to get those, you know, whatever features they are.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking the same thing, but possibly about the MacBook Pro and the graphics card. Like maybe they need the extra battery power in the 15-inch because the battery is larger to power a dedicated graphics card. So they're probably, I'm imagining you're at least partly right. There's probably some technical reasons that we never think of that Apple has to, you know, consider when they're building these devices. But enough with the larger size phone, Buster.
You want to go small?
Dude, well, I don't want to go small. Oh. But you wrote a piece that said, the iPhone SE proves size doesn't matter. And I was excited by this because I've been saying this for years.
Well, yeah.
I've been telling everyone I know that size doesn't matter. And I was expecting a killer argument here.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be honest, when I got to the article, I felt like you had misled me.
Oh, yeah?
But I read it anyway. Well, I actually only read part of it because I wanted to be fresh when you were saying,
you did like
telling your review on the show.
You didn't like the first sentence? I forgot how good it feels to hold 4 inches of magic in my hands.
You know what? I didn't see that, actually. Oh. That might be some of your best work.
Oh, I thought so.
So, did you buy the iPhone SE?
Well, temporarily.
Oh, I see. Okay. You are going to potentially take advantage of the Apple 2-week return policy.
Definitely. Definitely.
Okay. You know what? That's what it's there for, because if you had bought it and thought it was awesome, you would keep it.
Yeah. Well, no. I already have a 6S, so I don't really need it, you know?
Yeah. You could have been wowed by the smaller form
factor.
Yeah,
I could have, but I have all kinds of accessories for my 6S that don't work with the SE. So that's another reason why I didn't keep it.
Most people have probably sold all their accessories so far if they ended up moving on.
Yeah.
Anyway, so 4 inches of magic in your hand.
Yeah.
I like where this is going.
Dude.
So what did you think? How did you like it?
No, but it was great. I mean, it's a classic iPhone, you know, 5 inches or 4 inches. It's just, you know, it's exactly like using an iPhone 5S, only it's super fast and the camera's great. And it has Touch ID.
How was the Touch ID?
Fine. You know, I feel like Touch ID always works great, the first couple weeks for me. And then after, on those phones, it would stop working as well. So,
but not on your 6S, right? On that model of Touch ID.
Right. On the 6S,
it's totally
been fine.
Same problem here. Yeah, I would use it, and it would be accurate when I would first train it, and it would slowly get less and less reliable and more belligerent. It's like going to the bar with El Caney. You get there and he's real sharp. But 2 hours in, he's totally belligerent. You don't understand what's going on. I mean, the old El Caney.
Right. Yes.
You're not drinking anymore, right?
No.
But I have to say, Leander, drinking El Caney, he's a lot of fun to be around. As long as you're wearing
a cup.
I'm
still just as much fun.
Yeah, that's true. But drunk El Caney, he's on a whole nother level.
Funny, yeah.
So no big desire to switch back, Buster?
I do. I mean, I would, but it's I would just be switching back for 6 months. I would be switching to the small size for 6 months, and then when the 7 Plus comes out with a dual lens camera, I'll be I have to have the best camera, and I would get that. So I'm is it worth the hassle? I really liked how small it is, and it's almost you kind of forget about it. It's more you kind of forget about your phone more often, whereas with the 6 or 6 Plus, I'm always into it, always trying to play games on that. So I liked it for the small factor of it. But the specs just can't lure me for long enough, I don't think.
Let me set up a hypothetical then. let's say that no new iPhone was coming out in the next year and a half.
Well, year
and you got to choose, you know, you got to get your a refund on whichever phone you had, so you only had to pay for one. So would you go with the SE or would you stick with the 6S?
Yeah, I would maybe go with the SE. Yeah, I probably would.
Really?
Yeah, if it was like, yeah, if everything was perfect and like Apple's not going to make another phone in 6 months, then sure, I would stay with that.
So the smaller form factor, you're liking that much?
Yeah, because then I just go to the iPad for bigger stuff.
Right. It just goes to show that whatever you don't have is the one that ends up, you know, looking best.
The one you want. It's always greener. It's the one you want,
right. It's always like, yeah, it's always their newest device. Because, I mean, those two phones are so similar in specs. Although the FaceTime camera on the 6S is better.
Yeah.
But, and as far as, like, the design of the actual exterior goes, I mean, you've owned a 5S before. Is it exactly the same? Because I heard that it looks a little slightly different.
The edges are, like, camphored or whatever, but...
They're matte, right? The chamfered edges are matte?
Yeah.
And that's it?
Is that it? Yeah, I mean, I really didn't notice, like, too much difference at all. I mean, the cases, most cases still fit for it, that fit the 5S.
Nice. Which color did you get?
Oh, just gray, man.
So you didn't go pink?
No, I was thinking about the rose gold just to look fancy for a day or two, but...
If I were in your shoes, I definitely would have gotten the rose gold. That rose gold actually looks pretty nice.
Do you think so?
Well, because it doesn't have the ugly antenna lines.
Oh.
Well, it does, but I don't think they're as ugly as the 6S and the 6. I think they're hideous on that phone.
Okay.
They look terrible. Terrible. All right. Well, it's kind of what we expected then. It's a nice phone.
It's a nice phone. Yeah, it's a cheap phone.
I think a lot of people
like it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I saw a lot of people saying, you know, a lot of people on Twitter saying that they downgraded.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of that. But then there were some
from the 6S. I can see someone upgrading from the 6, but
no,
from the
downgraded, 6S? Yeah, from bigger phones. They wanted to return to that smaller form factor. There's a whole bunch of people on Twitter that said that.
Do they all have very small mustaches that they grease?
I don't know. They might they have
ride,
done.
And they ride fixie bicycles.
Well, no doubt, because like you know they're tight pants. But
hey, that's actually
there was a lot of people saying that. But then the reports of the sales were kind of ho hum. But I don't know if I believe those because you know I don't believe them.
Because I just don't believe them.
I don't know if I believe those because you know.
Well, based on I just don't. You know, Gene Munster used to go send a team of folks right down to the Apple Store and they would do these exit interviews. You know, they'd ask people what they bought and based upon that and. They're all kind of like muddled. I mean, you know, because Apple until you get some official figures from Apple. I mean, you know, I think there's no way to get good numbers unless you're going to get them from Apple.
I kind of believe it's not selling great, though, because it's not an exciting device for most people. Yeah.
The SIM-free model is already pushed back, like the shipping date. So, I mean, supplies are already starting to constrict on it.
There you go.
Boom.
Well, I mean, that could just mean that Apple's not making a ton of them, though.
That could be. But, I mean, there weren't any lines or any fanfare about it when I went to the Apple store. That's for sure.
I guess in my mind, that's what I compare it to. I mean, the iPhone 6 was just a juggernaut. You know, lines around the block for that phone.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Cook, you know, is drinking his Stella Artois partying because they were doing so well. And, that's right. You posted that pic. You saw that pic.
Uh-huh.
But this one, I think it's probably doing pretty well. I would be surprised if it didn't do better than the 5C.
Yeah, it's way more attractive than the 5C.
Yeah,
because it has
definitely
new guts. It's like, it feels like a great phone.
Yeah, it has that classic, really beautiful design of the 5, which I liked. I liked a lot. So, I mean, again, not a bad phone. I just don't think it's all that exciting. Speaking of exciting, jeez, look at that segue. Apple just turned 40 years old, and there is a great piece out on Cultimac that goes over 40 moments that have defined Apple over 40 years. Tons of great moments in here, many of which I are moments that I didn't even know about. And so if you want to read that, make sure you check out the show notes. And I thought it'd be fun to pick a favorite moment for each of us, and we can talk about one of the moments that we thought maybe was the most impactful for Apple, And this is going to be particularly interesting to hear Leander talk about it, because he was there for most of these moments. like actually there. He told us before what his pick was going to be for this.
Yeah, but then I changed my mind. And in fact, I've narrowed it down to about, I don't know, 38 of them.
Yeah, okay, great. We're going to have an extended show today. You're not going to do that original one? Really?
Yeah, I can do that.
Did you change? No, you could do whatever one you want.
You know, I was thinking about it. You know, 40 moments, and it starts with Apple's founding, and then it's, you know, the launch of the Apple II and the Mac and blah, blah, blah. And you look through it and you go, okay, well, yeah, that made a huge difference, and that was really important. And yeah, right. that was a big, big change, you know. And that was what I mean about, you know, having 38 moments, because, you know, I think it's all added up, hasn't it? You know, it's a cumulative effect. The most important thing, obviously, being the founding of the company in the first place. Right. You know, and the Apple One or whatever. But after that, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that I think was really, really important that's had a huge effect on the company. So it's hard to choose one.
It is hard. And I know what you mean, because I was looking through that list and I was like, well, clearly the founding of the company is the most important one, right?
Right, but then, you know, Steve Jobs' return, you know, yeah, has got to be way,
the second
way up
one,
there.
Right? Yeah, that's what I would say would be the top one after founding it.
Really? Was that your pick, Buster?
Yeah, that's what I would have said, just because... I mean, the company was in the gutter and he brought it completely back from the dead. It wouldn't be here, you know, you wouldn't have iPods, iMacs, iPhones, iPads at all if that wouldn't have happened. So,
Leander, which, you could choose more than one if you want. What were going to be your picks?
Well, I was going to say, you know, maybe the iPod, the first iPod, you know, that was like the first product that I think really changed the trajectory of the company. But then if you really want to get into the geeky details, you know, it really wasn't the first iPod that really made the difference. It wasn't until like the third generation iPod that it really took off. And, you know, I don't know. I was going to talk about the iPhone, because that's a moment that I, you know, like you said earlier, personally witnessed. You know, I was there at Macworld when Jobs introduced the iPhone. And what was, you know, special about that was that there was a really, really strong sense of history being made, and like it's a cultural moment. It felt like being at, like, you know, I don't know, Altamont when the Stones are playing, or you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to compare. I don't want to get. I was going to say MLK, you know, when he's giving his "I Have a Dream" speech. I mean, that's a little bit.
Might be going a little too far.
But I think definitely it is a historical. Like in the true sense of the word, a historical moment, because I think it has changed so much. I mean, if you look at the latest numbers about the number of people around the world that have a smartphone now, you know, when that thing came out, it was greeted with a ton of skepticism. There were a lot of people really, really skeptical about that. I mean, almost universally, except for, I guess, you know, like there was a pretty, I think the Apple audience knew that it was going to be a big thing.
I mean, I certainly did. The buzz leading up to that device was palpable.
But outside of the Apple bubble, which was then, even though the iPod was a giant hit, don't you remember everyone was saying the iPod was a, you know, there was definitely this feeling that the iPod was a lucky fluke. Yeah. And Jobs was still derided as a sort of one-hit wonder and like a clever marketer, you know, who sort of like took other people's ideas and you know, was good at advertising and marketing. And at that time, 2007, you know, it's sort of before he was sick, before, you know, the iPhone was a ginormous hit. And he really wasn't respected, especially in the business press. You know, like he was definitely sort of seen as this, you know, somewhat of a charlatan.
It's so interesting to hear you describe that, because I don't remember ever being that way, you know, but you
his image has done
improved
dramatically. Oh my God, it's 180.
Yeah.
But up until that point, up until the iPhone was a hit, he was seen as you know, like he got lucky. Like the iPod was like a lucky break, a fluke. And you know, he didn't really get any credit for that, nor for with turning Apple around. The iPhone really, really changed everything. Like you can go back and definitely look at this. If you look at some of the articles that were written about him before you know, before the iPhone, and then the iPhone was like that really cemented his reputation. Especially when he died. And it wasn't really until, you know, like, and I think it was when he was dying, really, that people started to reevaluate his work and his life. It came really late in his career. He'd never really gotten any respect. It's kind of strange. And now, of course, he's lionized as, like, America's greatest CEO, and he's definitely up there, you know, amongst them. But I think culturally that, you know,
society really hadn't given them, you know, any credit. And now I think it gets too much credit. But anyway, that's a different point. But the iPhone launch, yeah, definitely was amazing. And if you go back and look at it, it's definitely one for the ages. What's so beautiful about it is that he explains his thinking. He leads you through it. You know, he talks about the current state of phones, you know, which at the time were horrible. And he talks quite frankly about the Razr, that experiment they did with Motorola, and the iPod, yeah. and how it's clear that two devices were going to come together. And it's beautiful just to see the thinking, you know, like, it's really kind of, you know, he's really quite frank. When you go back and look at some of these old keynotes that he gives, in retrospect, he's quite open about, you know, the ideas and the steps and the thinking, the strategy behind the different products. I think they're interesting to watch sometimes in retrospect, especially, you know, when years go past. Another good one is like the digital hub, you know, like, because that really explained about their thinking, that which led to the iPod after the launch of the iMac, and how your desktop computer was like the hub for all these different activities, you know, with these different devices. That one's an interesting one to see too, because it definitely lays out their strategy, which led to the iPod and then the iPhone and all these other devices. But yeah, that for me, that's probably one of the most important moments.
I mean, just you being in that room, you know, have you ever had like a live album and you listen to it 100,000 times and you think to yourself, the people who got to be there for that one performance were so lucky, right? Like, they got to be there when this amazing album was recorded, this performance was just perfect. And that's how I feel about you at that keynote. Yeah. Like, you bastard. You got to be there. I mean, truly, it's especially now, Apple's about to sell like their 1 billionth iPhone this summer, and how much the world has changed because of that one device. And you were there when he introduced it, and yeah. everyone was like pinching their nipples in ecstasy and fainting.
Well, I'm in the press section, right? The press are all rolling their eyes. They all hate him.
Really?
Yeah, mostly. And, you know, there's a big section of the crowd that's cheering wildly, but I think, yeah, the press especially are definitely sort of very skeptical. And then when we went out, it was in, you know, they only had one that was in a, there was no hands-on, right? So they only had one device that was on sort of public display, and it was on the show floor, and it was inside this glass jar, in a glass enclosure. So, and it wasn't even turned on. I'm sorry, they had a few of them. I think there was maybe half a dozen or so, I can't remember exactly, but they're on these pedestals and they turn around. They're not turned on. And you look at that, and I remember people thinking, oh my God, you know, these, and they were 6 months away. They weren't even going to launch until the summer, like in July. And there was a lot of skepticism. It definitely built, though, like the hype built. That was super clever, but they introduced it at Macworld in January and they didn't release it until July. But come July, there were lines around the block. Remember, people were like, this is the beginning.
Yeah, Buster was one of them.
This is the beginning of the lines for the Apple products, you know, at the stores. And I think sort of people's perceptions about it really changed, because there was going to be no apps on it. There was going to be no Flash. Remember Flash? There was huge controversy about that. It wasn't going to support Flash. Oh my God. It was going to be doomed because it didn't support Flash. Mm-hmm. And what were the other things as well? There was some other stuff. Oh, it was kind of slow, right? It was on the AT&T's crack. It was exclusive to AT&T.
AT&T exclusive.
And they were kind of like where Sprint is now, right? They were like the laggard, horrible network, you know, that no one really wanted to be on. There was a lot of skepticism, I think, about it. And Ballmer, oh, no keyboard.
Yeah,
that was the
one,
thing.
Right. The interview with Ballmer laughing about like all the stock or right. the specs and yes. like
everyone was saying, you know, from the computer industry to the phone industry were like, you know, these computer guys, you know, they're going to get their lunch eaten. They don't know what they're talking about. You know, that they don't know how to make a phone. So if you go back and look at all that stuff at the time, I mean, it was greeted with a lot of skepticism, and the sales even weren't that many. I mean, they didn't sell that many. It was still kind of pricey, wasn't it? People were used to getting a free phone with a 2-year contract,
right.
and then to go out and spend, I think it was like $700.
Yeah,
was kind of like it took a while for that to take off too.
I remember one of the best features on the phone being, oh my gosh, you can text people who have an iPhone for free.
Yeah.
Because at that time, text message packages were so expensive and you got like a certain amount, right? So for me, that was a big draw. Oh my gosh, Apple's, they're totally going to take this over and make it so that text messages are free, which they did. And I was really impressed by that, but I still didn't buy one because I didn't want to spend. How much was it? Did you say $600?
Yeah, it was.
How much did you spend on yours, Buster?
I remember spending like $700, which was crazy because I think like, yeah, I had bought like dumb phones before. The max you'd ever spend was like $100 maybe, you know?
Yeah, right, right. All the phones I'd ever owned before that were pretty, but they worked terribly.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Razr was the big thing, right? Because it looked super cool.
Uh-huh.
And the menu on it or the UI looked great. But then once you actually started using it, it was just awful. And I had like this burgundy, like Razr phone.
I had
phone
a burgundy one
metal.
Too.
Yeah, like did you?
But yeah, it was burgundy.
We may have had the same phone. And I thought it was so cool looking. And because all the other phones were like those Nokia candy bar phones. They were really plain and the numbers were just right there.
Yeah.
And I had my cool flip phone. I could flip open and take
cool
a call anytime I wanted.
Yeah, I used those dumb candy bar phones.
That's right. That's right. Oh my gosh. I had so many bad phones before that. My favorite moment, this is funny that Buster, you and I picked the same moment that I thought was the most impactful was when Steve Jobs returned to Apple. And as you said, Lander, there are so many different moments in here that contributed to Apple's success or could have meant its demise. I mean, they're scattered all through this piece. But when Steve Jobs came back, Apple was, they were circling the drain, it seemed to me. And I don't know how long it would have been before they went out of business, but it kind of seemed like they were definitely going to go out of business at a certain point. And, you know, if Steve Jobs hadn't returned, hadn't taken over Apple again, we probably wouldn't have the operating system that we have today, since that's what Next contributed when Apple bought them. And then we wouldn't have had any of these new devices that we have today, the iPad, the iPhone, probably the unibody MacBooks. I mean, anything, Apple probably would have been gone. And I feel like Steve Jobs returning contributed to a new renaissance at Apple where they broke out of their existing mold and kind of skyrocketed into the stratosphere as far as popularity and profit goes too, because the iPhone was and is the most popular device they have ever made. And it's the source of – do you guys know the exact percentage? It's like – isn't it like 50 or 60% of their revenue still?
What? Oh, yeah. It's a huge –
the iPhone, oh, it's, yeah. No, it's way higher than that.
It might be 70.
Yeah, yeah,
actually.
Yeah. It's like 70, 80%.
I wonder if they're still getting a cut of the monthly plans from the carriers. Because weren't they initially doing that?
That's a question I haven't thought about ever.
I don't think they... Huh. Did they get... I thought.
Well, that's what I'm here for. I challenge you.
I thought they just get the money from the carriers. The big carriers are basically paying for half of your phone with a subsidy, but Apple doesn't get anything off the data plan or anything like that.
Well, regardless, so we wouldn't have had any of these devices without Steve Jobs returning. So for me, that was the most seminal moment in that entire
list. Yeah, but that's a good counterfactual there, you know, which is like, you know, Johnny Ive's design studio was already churning out stuff like that. You know, they had all these like funky, colored, crazy looking E-mates and Newtons. You know, they had MP3 players that they had in the lab.
But who knows if any of those products would have been popularized.
Yeah, no, they would have stunk. Leonard, I mean, because, they put out the 20th anniversary Mac, you know, which was way overpriced, really bizarrely marketed. You know, that originally began life as a replacement for the, you know, the original Mac. Like it was a precursor to the iMac, and they wanted a low cost but sleek computer that would go in the living room, like a machine that was designed for the home, which at the time was really unusual because most computers were made for businesses.
They were very business oriented.
Right, all beige. Yeah, exactly. So
right.
You know, Jobs empowered that team, empowered the industrial design team, and elevated them to the most important team at Apple, which led to this modern era. So it's exactly true. But
and they might have been buried under the bureaucracy.
Right, they were. Yeah, they couldn't get. They were just another voice at the table, and not even a very powerful one at that.
So I encourage you, if you guys haven't read this story already, check it out. There's, as I said, 40 moments. It's kind of tough to choose which one you think might be the your favorite or the most impactful. There are so many great ones in this list. And there are some devices that were impactful that I didn't even know ever existed. So you might actually learn some stuff too. Let's move on to faves and raves. But before we do that, let me go ahead and say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace allows you to build a beautiful website quickly, and you have some different options, and these are all included with your Squarespace plan. You could build a regular website, to showcase some of your work. You could build a blog. You could make a cover page, which is a very impactful, beautiful one single page website. Maybe a picture of yourself, something that features your work, just to kind of have a presence on the web. And then if you want to build an e-commerce store, that is also included in your Squarespace subscription. I mean, they give you everything. And their tools are so simple to use. They really couldn't be easier. I know because I've built several Squarespace sites. Cultcloth.co is run on Squarespace. You just drag and drop stuff. Drag and drop. Bing, bong, boom. Their image galleries couldn't be simpler to build or organize. You can change the color schemes. You can change the fonts. Usually with this type of customizability, you would have to be a programmer. You would have to hire a programmer and go in and have them change all these little details. And you'd be spending a ton of money per hour to have someone help you do that. Squarespace makes everything drag and drop, but it's just as powerful. And if you want to go in and adjust the CSS, if you know how to do that, you can do that as well. That's why I say Squarespace is one of the best values in the web host business. And they make it easy to build a website yourself and run it yourself, which is the most important part. So you'll actually be able to keep your website organized and up to date. Check it out, squarespace.com. You can get signed up with a 2-week free trial. They don't even need your credit card number. You can just start building your site right there, play around with it. It's like Legos. You just dive in and start building it. And then if you're happy with what you build, if you want to continue your service after the 2-week free trial, you can sign up for a subscription. And if you use the code CULTCAST at checkout, you'll save 10% off any order. And if you order a year of service, you will get a free domain name. I love Squarespace. I pay for it every single month. Squarespace.com. Thank you, Squarespace, for supporting this episode. All right, let's move on, Leander, to faves and raves and faves and raves and...
raves. Oh, gosh, that's so sorry. That's all I could muster.
We need Alex back, that lovely falsetto that he built out. That guy had no shame. This is a segment where we pitch our favorite apps and tech, and then we vote on which is best. This week, we got to remember the vote, because last time we did this, I don't remember what happened, but we got so excited that we didn't actually vote. So don't let me resolve close the show without voting. I've got a monster this week. And I've been reviewing this thing for a little while. I've been meaning to talk about it, but haven't gotten the chance to yet. So,
what is it?
Should I just go first?
Yeah. I mean, you've been hyping it for 3 hours now.
I haven't hyped it. I think it's worth the hype. I'm going to save the last feature of this product for last. I'll talk about it last.
Okay.
I am reviewing, because I think it's the most exciting. I have been lucky enough to review a monitor called the Acer XR341CK. And this thing is a beast. It's a 34-inch curved ultra-wide QHD display. So it's 1440p. So that's 3440 by 1440. Has a 21:9 aspect ratio. So it's real thin.
Damn.
And it's glorious. You can have two full-size browser windows side by side on your screen.
Whoa.
You can, it's a productivity beast. You can have so many windows open at the same time. It has a plethora of connections on the back, DisplayPort, mini DisplayPort, HDMI. You can plug anything into this monitor. And it has an insanely high refresh rate, especially at the higher resolutions. You can go all the way up to 75 hertz in 1440, which is very, very fast for a monitor with this resolution. And it has support for your Mac's video card. And that means that when you plug in your Mac, as long as you have a newer Mac, I think if you've bought something in the last, maybe like 3 years, it's going to support FreeSync, which works with AMD graphics cards. And that means that when you're playing games on this thing, it's not going to have screen tearing or artifacts all over the screen because the refresh rate is so high. So it's particularly good. This model is particularly good for Macs, especially if you game.
How do you have
Mac.
It plugged in? Like a Thunder thing? What? The lightning?
Thundercats. I have it plugged in via Thundercat port.
I can't remember the name of it. Thunderbolt, right.
Dude, I always forget the names too. I get Lightning and Thunder mixed up all the time. Yes, it's Thunderbolt. I have it plugged in via Thunderbolt and it's daisy chained to some of my hard drives as well. It has two speakers built in, so your sound is going to be improved right off the bat because it has these rear firing speakers. But here's the best part. Okay, you ready for this? You guys aren't going to like this, but I love it. Along the bottom of the bezel, pointing downwards, it has a bunch of. Are you ready? Are you ready for this, Buster? LED lighting.
Oh, boo! What, so you can have a little rave at your desk?
It's got that bling for that desk rave you've been trying to have. And you can just turn up the EDM. And you're going to feel like you're in a rave. Get out your glow sticks, my friends, because you can control the lighting, color, and the brightness on the bottom of the monitor. And if this sounds cool to you, it looks cool. Like when you got the lights down in your office and you got your Mac sitting in front of this thing, and behind your Mac is like this effervescent blue flow just coming off this monitor, it looks pretty baller. And dare I say, the ladies, they're gonna love it.
Really?
Oh yeah. Wow. Ladies love LED lights.
Okay.
That's one thing I've learned. Like if you build a PC, you need to put as many LED lights in that thing as you can because ladies love it. That's my pick. It is $1,000. It's $1,000. But it is a beast of a monitor. It's the Acer XR341CK. Fantastic for productivity, even better for gaming. And I think one of the best 1440 monitors on the market right now.
Great name, too.
Yeah.
Killer name.
The name just rolls off the tongue. The XR. Oh my gosh, is that the XR341CK?
No.
You know it,
it's
you know
the
it, girl.
342. Sorry.
All right, what do you guys got?
But
well,
but you go next, Buster.
Well, you go ahead, Leon. Okay, I can go, you can go.
All right, well I've got I'll go then. I've got the two new Amazon Echo devices, the Echo Dot and the Amazon Tap. And so you know what Amazon Echo is? It's like a black cylinder with a built-in speaker. It's a connected speaker, so you can, and it has amazing speech recognition. So you can ask it to do a whole bunch of things, and Amazon keeps on adding new features every week. But anything from sports scores to the weather to the traffic at home, I use it all the time to play music, to play the radio. You can ask it for specific artists. This morning I asked it to play some Merle Haggard, and then immediately asked it to stop it. And
good choice.
It's artificial intelligence, you know, as it should be. It unlike Siri, it's the recognition is almost always dead on. It doesn't misinterpret what you say. But best yet, with the Echo, it's always listening. So I always find that I don't know. I haven't gotten into the habit. I've got Hey Siri turned on a bunch of my devices, but. I kind of haven't gotten into the habit of using it. So I don't know. Maybe it's not a fair argument. But the Echo I use all the time here in the office. And you call out to it to ask it something, set a timer, set an alarm, you know, set a reminder. Hmm. I got into the habit of using it, whereas I haven't gotten the habit with using Hey Siri. And like I said, with Siri, I find that, you know, there are so many, you know, it's gotten more reliable, but it's not as good as the Echo. And the Echo is super fast. It's almost instantaneous. It's uncanny how quick it is.
Wow.
Anyway, so they have two new devices. The Echo Dot is like the top part of the regular Amazon Echo. So it doesn't have a speaker. It's made to be plugged into an existing speaker or speaker system. So I've got a little desktop bookshelf speaker system here at the office. And the Dot is plugged into that. And it comes out of these two bookshelf speakers I have. And the Amazon Tap is a battery-powered one. So it looks like one of those UE speakers, you know, a cylinder speaker. It's about the size of like a big one of those big can of beans,
like a big cake.
Well, a big can of beans, you know, those big cans of beans, the bigger ones.
Oh yeah,
the
I love beans. Those bean cans. Yeah, so
a little bit thinner than that, and it's not a bad sounding speaker. The problem with both of these is that you have to press a button to get it to listen to you. This is on the top, the battery powered one. This is to save the battery. Even though it has, I think it has like an 8-9 hour battery if it's playing music and who knows on standby. But you know, to get you can't call out to it across the room to do anything, even when it's sitting in this dock, which is a huge mistake. They've got to fix that with a software update. So it sits on a little charging dock, which is actually a really nice touch. It's really well designed and really well made. Mm-hmm. But you got to go press a button, which kind of like, which is, you know, puts it back into sort of Hey Siri territory, you know, where you actually have to do something actionable to get the thing to wake up. But, you know, in general, the recognition is pretty good. The music's pretty good. I was using it all around the house, you know, at the weekend. I like the portability of it. It doesn't sound too bad. It's not the best portable speaker. And the Dot 2 suffers the same problem. You know, the speaker system I have, it plugged into, has an auto power off. So if you don't use it, it powers itself down. So I got the same problem. Like, all the time I keep on calling out to it, "Hey, Siri, play the radio." And then nothing happens. And I forgot. I got to go turn on the stereo. So you have to go and turn the stereo on to actually hear it, you know, to get it to do anything. So, that, you know, it's like they're both a bit flawed because of that, because it kind of it takes away that key functionality, which is that sort of always on, always listening.
That kind of seems like those two products seem a little bizarre to me, because the compromises they make to make the products less expensive seem like they take the magic away from the Amazon.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, if they made it less expensive, I think that, you know, they have. They if you had it plugged into it, if you had the Dot plugged into a stereo that was on all the time, it wouldn't suffer that problem, and you know, it potentially would give you a much better sound experience because it's.
But don't most people turn their stereos off?
Yeah.
I mean, who leaves their stereo on full time?
Well, you know, you might be able to plug it into. Yeah, you know, I guess if you plugged it into it, like a Bluetooth speaker or, like a home theater system. You know, the home theater system isn't that on more often than not. And you know what? One thing I don't know, which it doesn't. This stereo I have here at work turns itself on when it gets input from the TV. So. I don't ever have to turn it on. This is, you know, I've never really sort of thought about it.
That's
handy. So if it's plugged into the TV. It's like the home theater system for this TV I have at the office. But that's through the optical audio. It has an optical audio in, and it doesn't do this when, because the echo is plugged in through a regular, you know, 3.5 millimeter jack. So it doesn't turn itself on when it gets input from that, which is a shame.
You love the Amazon Echo so much. I'm now kicking myself for not buying one at $100 when I had the chance.
Yeah, you should talk to Lewis. I mean, Mike, he loves it even more. Yeah,
really?
He really uses it. He's really dug into it. Like every week, they send out an email with a big long list of all these new things it does, and it's kind of amazing. I mean, they've added a lot of stuff, and there's all sorts of connected home stuff now that they've added to it. And I don't have many of those products. So, I mean, I think like a couple of weeks ago they added it'll control your Nest thermostat and all the other Nest stuff. It works with Nest.
Oh, that is handy. Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of that home automation stuff that works. There's a whole bunch of news and sources. I mean, I don't even use it for shopping, really. I was sort of like, Tracy won't let me buy anything anymore, so I can't really do that. But the shopping stuff looks kind of handy, you know, like... Hold on, my phone's ringing.
No worries. Okay. He said that's the Amazon Dot.
Yeah, the Dot, which is $90. The Echo Dot. And then the Amazon Tap, which is $130. That's a bit steep.
Okay. Buster.
What's up?
What you got?
I just got a camera. Nice. It's not even new, actually, but I'm really digging it. It's the Fujifilm X-T1 camera.
You got one of those?
I got one of those.
Are you reviewing it?
Yeah, I'm reviewing it for like a month.
Gun.
Yeah, and it's awesome, man. Like, super small. So I've been looking. I had like a Nikon D610 for a while, and it was great. Yeah. But it's like, you know, the DSLRs, they're just so bulky. So
they're huge, man.
Yeah, so I'm looking for something that's mirrorless and small, but can also take some like decent low-light pictures, because I usually use my iPhone most of the time now. But, dude, this thing, it's so awesome. It's 16 megapixels, so it's not huge pictures, but they're pretty great.
I think 16 is enough for most anything.
Yeah, the sensor is, you know, it's great. They're super crisp pictures is the thing, so they look good, even if they're not, like, 20 megapixels, like on some even point-and-shoots have that now.
Well, the thing about those Fuji cameras, too, is they don't have an anti-aliasing filter on the sensor like most other camera sensors do, because they designed that sensor themselves, and so they're sharper than other cameras.
Yeah
People rave about the pictures on those. Isn't that really, really awesome?
How do you like the picture quality so far?
It's been good. I'm gonna take it out to the Grand Canyon like this weekend and do some more testing, see if like I can even do some night photography on it. But I really dig like just the style of it. Like I like having all the aperture, shutter, exposure dials up there on the top, not having to like look into my viewfinder to see if like I set the aperture right, like while I'm shooting or something, you know.
I would so much rather have. So I have a Canon 5D Mark III. I would so much rather have dials and knobs and you know buttons to control my camera than to do things in the software.
Yeah, totally. That's
it's so much faster and it's easy to see what you've done.
Right. It's great for like learning, you know? Like
I did too.
So I mean, I'm not like the best at, you know, manually exposing everything, but it's helped me quite a bit, like to just mix things up, because then you can just see exactly where all the settings are and stuff. So
does the X-T1 have interchangeable lenses, or is it a fixed focal length?
It does. I'm just using a 27 millimeter lens right now. Okay. It's super compact though. That's why I like it. So it can fit in like my backpack when I'm hiking. Usually like your lenses are as much weight as the body of the camera, like you're carrying around. So
right.
I just need something super light. I can pull out of my pack really quick and take some decent pictures.
Well, I mean, that's one of the best arguments for having a camera like that is, so I have this beautiful Canon 5D Mark III sitting here.
Mm-hmm.
It has a ginormous lens on it, and it takes great photos. But the camera weighs, with the lens, 5 pounds, 4 pounds, and so I end up not taking it with me anywhere because it's so freaking huge.
Right, or like...
And so, yeah, you just don't end up taking pictures with
it. Yeah, like it's so big, it's so bulky, like you don't like want to pull it out. Like I'll have my... I used to have my big camera like on hikes all the time, but would go hours without like pulling it out at all just because I'm so lazy. Because
it sucks. Yeah. Don't carry that thing around.
Yeah.
And it's easy to drop.
Right. Yeah. That's happened.
How much does this one weigh then, Busta?
Yeah, how much?
It's $1,400 on Amazon.
That includes the lens.
Yeah, it includes the kit lens.
But how much does it weigh? I think we need to resolve.
Oh, how much does it weigh? Oh, sorry. I don't know.
I don't want to ruin the flow
there. Specifications here.
1,400? Yeah, that's not bad for an SLR quality camera, is it? It's a lot cheaper than
that. No, it's not bad.
No, I mean, especially not with the lens.
Yeah.
And this is their newest model, so it's pretty hot right now.
It's 440 grams. I don't know what that is in pounds.
Oh, perfect, yes. I hate to carry anything more than 450 grams.
1.4 ounces, I think that's just a little bit over a pound.
You said 1.4 ounces?
15.4.
Oh, that's under a pound.
Is it?
A pound
okay.
16 ounces,
okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. So under a pound for the camera and the lens.
Yeah.
Because my camera body weighs over a pound, I think.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you put a lens on it, it's like, forget about it.
Boom.
All right. So, boy, this is one of our better faves and raves.
Yeah, you said you wanted to go big.
We got some good picks here. My choice is easy because I have wanted one for a long time anyway. I'm going with the Amazon Dot. No, I'm not.
You should have got one when it was $100 for sure.
I should have. I'm kicking myself. I mean, they sent me that email and I was like, you know, I just don't know what I'm going to do with this.
Yeah,
so
I was
going to
get one from like my mom. And I was looking at Craigslist. That people are selling for like a dollar off, you know? I mean, they're not even discounting them.
What?
A dollar off.
On Craigslist, yeah.
You know, you should tell them to meet you at a 7-Eleven and just punch them in the face and take it and run. That's what you need to do. My vote clearly is going for the Fuji X-T1.
Wow.
Buster, I was not expecting you to have something worthwhile.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Underestimated.
Yeah. Dude. I thought you were going to be like, I have this app that keeps my recipes safe.
No, we have Amy, our review editor. She's like on
the
ball.
She's giving you
the
hookup,
huh? She's like, yeah. Review Dang. Stuff.
Is she offering you stuff to review?
Yeah, yeah, she does. Like she had a big old list of like some stuff, and I was like, okay, I'll take the drones.
Are you getting some drones
too?
Yeah,
some drones. That'll probably be my next one. Yeah.
Oh, dang! I gotta send this girl an email. All right, Leander,
yeah, I'm
going
for that
vote?
One too. I'm afraid.
Oh, yes.
I don't even
Sweep.
Have to vote. It's so good.
Well, Buster, you should at least
second
vote.
Place. Second place. I'll go.
Who's in second place?
Probably Leander, because I can't imagine using a 31-inch monitor anymore, to be honest.
Dude, you need to have some more vision. Have some vision in your life.
I mean,
this thing just imagine you could be watching a basketball game on one side and a WWE wrestling match on the other side.
That could be
just picture in picture too.
Okay, I could do that. Maybe. Yeah, I'm still gonna pick Leanders. I don't need that much screen.
Well, you know what? Few men do, but the real men, we need as much screen as possible. Actually, I was thinking I could go bigger.
Oh, really?
I was like, I need like a 45 inch.
Might as well just buy a TV, man. 4K TV. Put it on your desk.
Well, I was thinking about that too. 4K. I think next year is going to be the year of 4K for me.
Right on.
I got a 50 inch plasma right now, and 50 inches. It's funny when you have a small TV, you're like 50 inches. Who would need that much screen real estate? But then once you see it and you have it, you get used to it, and then you don't even notice that it's 50, and then you're like, I need a 65 4K. And then there's did you see that video that Lewis Helsentager did on his Unbox Therapy channel? He did 3 65-inch 4K panels and turned it into a gaming machine.
3 65-inch
4K
panels.
4Ks.
So it's like a 12K TV.
It's so many K. It's too many Ks. You don't need that many Ks.
What are you gonna do with them all?
I don't know, man. He was playing a video game on it, and it looked glorious. But he was getting sponsored by LG.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, who has room for that? I don't have room for 50-inch TV in my house.
Well, you got to move all your kids out. They're going to college, right?
Exactly.
That's your problem. You're wasting all that space on kids.
I'll be selling it to pay tuition next month.
That's right. Yeah, those monitors are $4,000 each. It's $1 per K.
Dang.
He's got three of them. Too many Ks. All right. Well, with that, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. Congratulations, Buster.
Oh, thank you. I'd like to thank Fuji.
For yet another win.
Yeah.
All right. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come tell us what you think is Apple's most impactful moment in the last 40 years, come say hi to us on Twitter. I'm at Arifon. Buster's BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. And make sure you're following Cult of Mac for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. How was that?
I thought it was Alex Heath.
I was doing Alex Heath doing Christopher Walken.
Oh.
We'll see you next week.
There you go. Yeah.
New audio recording.
Oh, Buster, what's going on in my neighborhood with the cops?
I don't know. I saw there was a shooting. That's all I saw. I only saw like one or two people tweeting about it, and that was it.
You saw a tweet about Leander's neighborhood?
Oh, yeah, where the offices are at.
Oh, really? They say a British guy who looks like Samuel L. Jackson escaping the crime scene.
Yeah. Shoot on site.
Tugging on the Kangol hat over his face so you couldn't see it.
I was going to say, what are you talking about, Samuel L. Jackson?
You're the British Samuel L. Jackson. Yeah. I really wish you hadn't retired that Kangol hat. You're one of the few white guys that can wear one of those, Leander. You should wear it proudly. Yeah. So? Most white guys cannot wear one of those without looking like a total tool.
But if I don't look like a total tool.
Pretty baller, actually.
Yeah, it's like, it's British.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's excusable.
Maybe that's it. You're like, that guy's a total tool.
Oh,
and then
he
you're like,
accent?
Oh, he's British. Oh, okay. I guess it's fine.
Yeah.
That's okay then.
Actually, now I like it.
I feel like a total tool. I caught myself in a mirror the other day. I wasn't expecting. I was like, look at that tool with that stupid Kangol hat on. And I was like, oh, fuck, it's me.
You almost hurled an insult at it, and then you're like, oh, wait, that's my reflection.
Damn.
Well, I had that, that look on my face. That's how I realized who it was.
I know what you mean. Sometimes, like, in the morning, especially if I don't get enough sleep or something, I look in the mirror in the morning, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, look at me. I look like an animal.
Well, that's why I avoid. I actively avoid the mirrors.
It probably gets more and more common as you get older, unless you're Rob Lowe.
Yeah, each time it's just really, it's just more and more shocking. Just, you think, oh my God, how did I end up looking like, what's the name of
John Goodman.